Shank Bagley. Shank Bagley. Shank Bagley. Hello and welcome to Shat Bagley, an old Lincolnshire adjective to describe absolutely anything loose and disorderly, which sums up this Lincolnshire lass quite nicely. Coming up, we talk cheese and emotions, gluten-free, and discover that 92 is the norm when it comes to recipes in a book. First though, with it being episode 13, here are a few other things with the same number. Estimated percentage of Brits trying to slim. Inches waist measurement decreed for ladies at the court of Catherine de Medici, Queen of France from 1547 to 1559. Kind of ties in with the first one, doesn't it? And recorded number of caesarean births by one woman. She'd have been better putting in a zip. Hope you've had a good week. Busy one this end with three events happening, one of which was Burwitton Show in Shropshire, a traditional agricultural show which can trace its history back to 1891. Minnie Priests organises the fairly new food hall area, which was where we were. She herself runs her 18-month-old business, Dairy Door, from her family farm in the county. It's fair to say Millie lives and breathes cheese. So I wanted to find out a little more, beginning with the milk she uses. She buys it in raw from a neighbour's Ayrshire cows. But why that breed in particular?
I did a little project during the start of my PhD looking at four different cattle breeds. So we looked at Jerseys, we looked at Ayrshires, we looked at Holstein Friesians, and we also looked at a Dairy Shorthorn, and I made cheddar with them. And to be honest, they're all very similar in the like cheese that they made. Obviously the Jersey, a bit like your Guernsey, which was really yellow cheese. But the Ayrshire, she was sort of like mid-ground in all the sort of results, and she just had a really nice milk, and the people that we had the milk off where we would get on really well with, and so that's sort of how we built the relationship. And they're, you know, they're British breed, aren't they, based up in originating from Scotland, so yeah, really nice cows.
So when you were at Harper Adams University, you did this project. In fact, you're still doing a PhD on cheese. So at that stage, had you thought you were going in to be making cheese?
I've always had this passion for like cheese, and just the science behind it was absolutely amazing. And then did my honours research project, which was in emotion and cheese and how it makes you feel. I found that basically cheese makes you feel happy. but it was quite interesting because a couple of the sensory attributes, like the smooth, when people said it was like the brie was smooth, they felt like they felt calm. And there was also interesting, they had Belton Red Fox, and a lady said that it took her right back to sitting at her granny's garden having that afternoon tea when she was younger. So it's really interesting how cheese and food can, you know, evoke nostalgia and evoke emotion and memories and things. So after that, I've thought I've always wanted to do my own business, and then realised that cheese was sort of the thing I wanted to do. So during lockdown, every sort of weekend, we were just making some milk on the hob, just trialling lots of different types of cheeses. But that's also when I applied for my PhD at that time.
Just going back then, cheese and emotions. I've never heard that before. So you studied this for how long?
It was just like what was called an honours research project at Harper, so in our final year. Because obviously chocolate, a lot of people eat chocolate when you feel low. So I wanted to look into like how cheese made you feel. Because obviously cheese is quite a big thing. People love cheese. So it was interesting just to see how how people reacted with that. And we tried six different cheeses. And mainly the best one was happy. A lot of people felt happy, especially with the cheddar. But then again, I was feeding them cheeses in a special like sensory booth at the uni, and I think people were a bit like, oh, it's okay, I know what this is. I know this is cheddar, so they're happy. But it was interesting, especially when we talked to them after about how certain cheeses reminded them of certain memories and things. Yeah, because a lot of people, you might smell something and think, oh, I remember that from that time, or... Yeah, so it's interesting how food can also give you that as well.
So alongside the business that you do, you're also doing a PhD again in cheese, and this time it's what?
Completely different than that, and completely different to the business, because mine's full fat cheese at home, but it's on low fat, low salt cheese and the potential to enrich with micronutrients. So it's basically, the idea is to try and mimic the milk fat globule, but have water droplets inside. So it's lower fat, but actually hopefully it will feel like full fat in the mouth, and then with those water droplets be able to fortify those with some kind of vitamins or minerals, so it's like a extra functional food with low fat, low salt, is the plan. So
but why is that? Is it that we're not wanting full fat cheese? Are we going away from it?
It's because obviously low fat cheese is often has like poor sensory attributes, and occasionally is like poor functionality, like in cooking and things. So the idea of the mechanisms that I'm using to try and make the cheese, like make the cheese, will hopefully like improve that, improve the sensory, improve the cooking, but it'll also give me an extra function of fortifying it with some minerals and vitamins. But as much as I'd love it to be in industry, I think it probably needs a little bit more research after my PhD to get it, you know, fully into market. But it's a really interesting topic to look at, and like look at how it could be used. And also cheese is great because it's a good vehicle in your body, because obviously it protects the vitamins and minerals through the stomach, so it actually gets through to your gut to release the vitamins, because obviously the like some of the protein and the fat, the like the enzymes in your stomach are working on those before they actually get to the vitamins and minerals, and then they're released in the small intestine, is the plan.
Who thought cheese could be so, well, interesting, really? So cheese in itself then is a superfood?
I think so. I think it's great.
Yeah, we might be a little biased, mightn't we? But it sounds as if it has got an application then for health.
Yeah, so as in, like, I'm using a mechanism called double emulsions, which will be incorporated in the cheese milk. So that in itself is the mechanism in which will help transport the vitamins to the right place in your body. But cheese is a good vehicle for that, if that makes sense.
See, cheese is also a good vehicle if you need to give your dog a tablet. That's a very good vehicle.
Yes.
Ah, the tricks of the trade. All the best to Millie and her PhD. She's already won awards for her brie style and halloumi style cheeses at the International Cheese Awards, and she's also been awarded a grant from the Academy of Cheese. Yes, there is one. Millie says she couldn't do it without the support of her family, but we know Grandad's happy, as the whey, when separated from the curd, is not only fed to the pigs, but also his tomatoes. And a handy tip with cheese, always serve it at room temperature. It was a good day at Burwarton. It's fair to say our summer has been a little wet, so wellies were the order of the day. And not sure we've seen people having to be towed on to a field before. It was by a rather large rut in the ground that I came across Colin Mitchell with his stall, Grandad Fats Gluten Free. Colin was there with his wife and grandson, so a real family affair, and already he had served customers who had sought him out early. One lovely chap I spoke to, Oni Young, was working at the show and told me he had celiac disease, and it was a real treat to be able to buy something to eat at an event. Celiac disease is a condition where your immune system attacks your own tissues when you eat gluten. Colin himself is celiac and was diagnosed 11 years ago.
I didn't know anything about it. I was ill. I had bowel cancer, and they sorted that out for me. And then after I went back, they said, oh yeah, we've got it all and that. But I said, well, you can't give it with one hand and take it away with the other. And they said, you're celiac. So I thought, oh right, okay. So, but hey, you can live with that, can't you?
So was it triggered by the bowel cancer? Was it linked? Did they ever say?
They didn't say. They have said that it can be related to that. So it could have been caused by the cancer. I don't know. But yeah, it's possible.
So, blow, but you are you cancer free now?
Yes. Oh yes.
What's
yes,
the
I'm
main
fine.
Thing?
Yeah.
So
I'm
we've left.
My wife that happy. I'm going nowhere.
So we're celiac. What does that mean then on a day-to-day basis?
It means that I can't have anything with wheat or gluten in it. You know, so it's mainly wheat, barley and rye that have got gluten in it. So you avoid all those, and you just learn to live with it. You know, it's just one of those things. You know, adapt your diet.
So is this why you created Grandad Fats? And yes. I suppose the big thing is why on earth Grandad Fats?
When I first left school, I went to work as a baker. I was an apprentice baker, and I was in the baking trade for over 20 years. And then I had to get out because of, they called it baker's asthma. But whether it was the start of the celiac, I don't know. So when I got diagnosed, you go to the supermarket, you buy the stuff that they were selling. It's expensive. It's not very good. So my wife said, well, stop moaning about it and do something. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, start making your own stuff. So I then started making bits and pieces. And gradually, it started coming good. The puff pastry took me about 2 years to get it right to where I want it to be. So much stuff went in the bin. But then I got it right. We were making stuff for home, and then other people said, can you make us some? So we thought, well, let's see if we can make a little business out of it then. And Grandad Fats, gluten-free, because she calls me Fats, and some of the grandkids call me Grandad Fats. So my one daughter-in-law says, I've got a great name for the business, Grandad Fats Gluten-Free. Yeah. It's catchy, yeah. You know, you're not going to forget it, are you? Yeah. So that's how it was created.
Do you remember the first thing that Grandad Fats produced then for sale? Because that must have been a really scary moment. It's one thing you enjoying and friends and family, but to then say to the public, here you go.
Yeah, we booked in to do Worcester Food Fair, hadn't we?
Yeah.
And I was making loads of meat pies and everything, and I'm thinking, is it going to go right? And one of the guys I used to buy some of my stuff from, he came, made a delivery the morning we were making all the pies and getting everything ready, and he was my first customer, Chris. Yeah, and he came in and bought a meat pie. He paid for it. He said, I want to be your first paying customer.
And he was,
yeah. So, yeah, and he's just grown from there, really.
So the gluten-free, you do all the baking yourself?
Yeah, they're all my own recipes, and I make every single thing from scratch myself, yeah.
So when you were first diagnosed, 11 years ago,
yeah.
In that time from 11 years ago to now, there's a lot more on offer, I suppose, because a lot more's known about it.
Yeah. You look in the supermarkets now, you know, the range has got so much better. But still, you know, the quality of some of it, and it's filled with so many additives. You know, I mean, we were at a garden centre a few months ago, and we saw a cake, and he got a best before date on it. It was 2 months away. And I thought, but it's filled with so much rubbish, isn't it? You know, I add nothing to this at all. You know, it'll last a few days, but it's all fresh. It can be frozen, and that's the way I prefer to do it.
So what's your... And I don't know, am I supposed to use the word flour of choice? Because you've got to have something, haven't you?
Yeah, there's lots of different flours. I try and blend my own, you know, with so many different things on the market. You can buy stuff, but it doesn't quite do the job. So I had a couple of little bits, Grandad Fat Secrets recipes, you see. So, yeah, I just add a couple of bits and pieces to it that help it along its way.
One of the things I know that you get across about, and indeed everyone that's certainly celiac, because that is a dangerous thing, is the cross-contamination, isn't it?
Yeah.
That you were saying.
Yeah. Again, we were in a garden centre and ordered some coffees. Have you got the gluten-free cake? And they said, oh yeah, we've got that one. It was right next to an ordinary cake, and they're using the same tongs for it. You know, and I said to the girl, I said, you can't do that. And they just look at you as if you've got two heads, you know, but if they're going to sell it, they've got to do it properly, you know. Fair play for having a go, but you've got to do your homework and sort out what you can do and what you can't do. Otherwise, people are going to be ill.
I think it's this thing where it almost became a trend, didn't it, gluten-free, but people don't realise, and probably the young lady behind the counter and whoever was in charge, that the celiac, it is lethal for gluten. It's not just a fad, it's your well-being.
No. Well, the thing is, you see, a lot of people, they say, I mean, I'm not going to knock vegans, but, you know, we were in a restaurant and we looked at the menu and I said to this girl, what have you got on here that's gluten-free? She went straight to the vegan, she says, you can have all that. And I said, well, no. Oh, so I can have the breaded chicken. Yeah. And I said, love, you're in the wrong job. You know, I can't have that. It's got breadcrumbs on it. You know, and she said, oh, isn't it the same? You know, and that's what really gets my back up. People that are in the industry, but they don't train the staff properly, you know. Because, yeah, it makes you ill. Again, people think, yeah, it's a fad. Oh, you're gluten-free. No, it's a medical condition. You know, it's not a lifestyle choice like some things are. You know, it is a disease. You have to be very careful what you do.
I think sometimes it probably helped a little bit having a lot of people talk about it, but they didn't do it for the right reasons, and yes, you're right. I gather it's hereditary. I didn't know that.
Well, so my middle son found out. No, I didn't know. So where I got it from, I have no idea. Yeah, my middle son, Michael, he's got it, and now his lad, Leo, has got it. So I've got to pass something on, haven't I? It could be worse.
Thank you to Colin. A real character, and you don't have to be gluten-free to enjoy his recipes. I had one of his beef pies and a scotch egg. They were gorgeous. He knows what he's doing with his pastry, that's for sure. And I'll put the link to Grandad Fats on Shat Bagley's Facebook and Instagram pages. Now, if you were with me last week, I said, please remind me to tell you about a support group I've joined for women on Facebook. You know, as you get older, things crop up, don't they, and menopause and whatever. So I thought I'd join. So I've done so for the last so many weeks. Well, couldn't believe it. Admin then posted on there that some of the members of this group had asked for the word woman to be replaced with, and I quote, vulva owners. Now, it's not the first time I've come across this, and I don't know about you, but I get the feeling we're almost having to apologise for being a woman. I appreciate we have to be careful with language and considering the feelings of those trapped in the wrong body, and it must be horrible. But us girls have always had to fight our own corner, and it appears we still have to. And to be honest, when I first heard of it, I thought, well, do I need to be associated with the Swedish car with its lights on all the time? Oh no, that's a Volvo. Anyway, do let me know thoughts. Staying with women in a man's world, and in particular chefs, if you're a fan of MasterChef The Professionals, you will certainly remember my next guest, Olivia Burt. Cool, calm, super talented, worked at Claridge's in London before her first head chef position in Chelsea, cooking for George Clooney, amongst others. I know. Now a private chef with an A-list clientele, Liv is just about to launch her very first cookbook. It was a surprise when she told me, so I definitely wanted to know more when we worked with her at an event in London last weekend.
Quite a long process. I think a lot of the dishes are dishes that I've been cooking for a while, and I think a lot of people always ask for those kind of like classic recipes, but then it's kind of fine-tuning them into home methods that people can kind of replicate. And obviously, having spent such a long time in restaurants, you know, you have to sort of really like shut that mind off. But also, I think there are a lot of very interesting kind of tips and tricks that people use in restaurants that are really helpful for people at home when they're kind of creating dinner parties and replicating things. So we're really trying to sort of bring that restaurant perfection into the home for lots of people.
Now, the other thing is with you, Liv, I've said before, there's not many chefs that present quite like you. So that must have been a bit different for you, because you're writing a book for us mere mortals to do at home, but your presentation is your thing. Does that come over at all in it as well?
Yeah, I think obviously we've gone for the title, which is Good Looking Cooking. This has been going back and forth for literally months on end.
What, the title?
Because obviously a title is a very important thing, and I think when you look at why somebody buys a cookbook, it's so often because of the title and the cover. Because, you know, even though I do go into bookshops and I flick through and, you know, you look at sort of three or four recipes and you think, yeah, this will do, and, you know, that's what you're looking for. But so much of it is sort of, does the title kind of say, okay, I'm interested in that?
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to really capture there. And I think that is a massive thing that people have said to me. Oh, well, like, you know I like that dish and I think it tastes really good, but when I plate it up, it looks awful.
Yeah.
And so that's why we've gone for something that's really, there's loads of, you know, photography in there. There's loads of kind of methods on how to plate things, what they look like, how they look on the table. And that's what we're really trying to capture and show people kind of how to plate things and give them that idea of, you know, when they've got somebody over, what it is actually going to look like at the end.
Yeah. Now, interesting, because you love your photography, and I did think you had done the pictures for your book, but you said no.
I would have loved to have shot the book myself. It never really came up in question. I think in order to shoot the book yourself and also cook the food yourself for the shoot and kind of, you know, the styling and everything like that, it probably would be quite an impossible task. But it's not saying I'd never do it. Hopefully there'll be another book somewhere down the line. And yeah, I'd definitely love to do some of the photography for
that. Yeah, and we've got you on the front cover, smiling.
I know, yeah. I had to put myself on the front cover, really. I think obviously your first book is a very big thing and it's something that I've wanted to do for a really long time. And yeah, smiling. I mean, cooking's what I love to do, so I think, you know, it makes me very, very happy. But yeah, hopefully that'll be, you'll see my face smiling in a bookstore soon.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Now, the recipes you do, the only bit I ever know about writing a book is it has to be original, so the recipes have to be yours. Even, I guess, if it's just a slight tweak of something, but they are yours.
I first met with a literary agent probably 5 years ago now. She gave me a tip. She was like, just get scrapbooks and just every time you create a recipe or you come up with something, just write it down. And it doesn't have to be for anything particular, but just write them down.
Right.
And one day you want to write a book and you can go back through that book and take all the recipes from there and you'll basically have the base of a book already. And I kind of think that's what I'd done. I had all these kind of just recipes like scribbled throughout everywhere and it's kind of just pooling all of that together. And so this first book is definitely a real picture of what I love at home. And I cook every single day. And a real kind of what's been going on for the last couple of years, what I absolutely love and how I cook at home.
And interesting, you said it's to celebrate British food as well, because that's important to you.
It's definitely a British cookbook. There are a couple of recipes in there that aren't, because obviously I don't just cook British food at home. But I think when we're talking about British food, we're talking a lot about highlighting the ingredients. So it's not saying that you can't cook a dish inspired by something from another country that's highlighting British ingredients. And so I think there's a massive focus on that. And, you know, I think there's a lot to be celebrated about British food. I think we do have some incredible food. I don't think it's got that good of a name, but I think, you know, we really need to showcase that and make people realise that we grow a lot of amazing produce in this country.
I think it's got better, and I think perhaps it's the British way. We're not very good at singing about it, are we? We're quite reserved a lot of the time, so maybe it's that. So hopefully that'll help. You do know when you have got the book out, you'll be asked by newspapers, magazines, demonstrations, and they will ask you to showcase the book. So there'll be probably at least one recipe that you're going to fly the flag for. What would it be out of the book?
It's a difficult question to know which would be my kind of favourite dish in the book. I think I'll probably have to have a think about that. I mean, obviously, we've been shooting the book for the last month. You know, there's so many different recipes. And I think it's really interesting when you're kind of forced to cook every single different recipe so close together. You think, like, God, I love this. And a couple of days later, you're like, God, I really love this as well. And I love this. So I'll have to have a think about that. But there's so many different things I love in there. And I thought when we first initially kind of were going through, I was going through with the publisher what the book was going to be about, and we had to write the kind of initial you know, recipes down. And I was like, God, 92 is a lot. Where are we going to find those? You know, and we got to the final thing and there were about 180, and I was like, okay, well, they can't all go in there. And you know, there are just so many things, and the more you kind of research and the more you go through kind of what I want to put in the book, you think, oh my God, there's just hundreds of recipes. And I think that's a really exciting thing, because it does mean that there's, you know, definitely another book in you. And
yeah.
You know, yeah,
92 is an unusual number. I'm intrigued. 92, is it because there's
apparently
so many pages?
Standard.
Is it?
Apparently. Oh. But I mean, people do all different, you know, size kind of books. And I think there are also lots of books that do sort of one base recipe and then sort of six recipes off that one base. I've tried not to do that because I want to try and give 92 sort of like full different recipes. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely a book based on, you know, hosting at home and creating sort of sharing tables and lots of sort of dishes that you can mix together to make a sort of, you know, what we describe as like a table of love. And I think lots of people love cooking at home, and you often cook for the people that you love. And so I think, you know, cooking for the people that you love is a much more enjoyable experience than when you're like, oh my God, I can't bother to do this. And so that's what we're really trying to, you know, make people really love what they're doing and really, you know, love the end product of what they've cooked. And I think that comes down for a lot of people in how it actually looks, because there's nothing worse when you've cooked something and it tastes delicious and you put it on the plate and you think, oh, well, that's not quite what I expected. And so we're trying to stop that feeling.
Yeah, welcome to my world, Liv. Doing pottery as well. I've always wanted to learn pottery. How are you getting on?
It's definitely something that I've always loved. Obviously, I nearly went to art school before I became a chef, so yeah, I absolutely love it. It's definitely something I need to put a little bit more time into. It's harder than I thought. You need to have a lot of patience. And I think with the clay, you push it a little bit too far and it just collapses. So I think it really is a learning process. But I definitely like to, you know, start doing it a lot more and really starting to build and make my own plates and crockery.
I was a little depressed because I said pottery always reminds me of the film Ghost. You say you've never heard of it.
I have never heard of the film Ghost, but I'll have to go and have a research.
Yes, a little depressing. Liv hadn't even heard of Ghost. She's promised me to watch it before we next catch up. Hope you have, Liv, as I shall have questions. If you're on Instagram, she is Chef Liv Burt, and the website oliviabirt.com, and certainly looking forward to good-looking cooking due out in October. As always, I love hearing from you, be it via social media or email, podcast@theshackbaggerly.co.uk. And if you feel the urge to leave a review, please don't fight it, and hope you're following or subscribing too, as it does help when I ask guests to join us. So that's it for another week. Thank you for listening and see you next time. Oh, and by the way, as for owning a vulva, no, I've got a Ford.